Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Los Angeles-based jazz singer and songwriter Angela O'Neill. We cover quite a bit in our interview from her home in L.A., like COVID, her acting career, life and music, and her new 2022 CD, Angela O'Neill and the Outrageous Eight, with the album Light at the End of the Tunnel. With this octet, they are an adventurous, ambitious, and ready to go after 2 years of dealing with the COVID pandemic. All of the band members are veterans of the Los Angeles jazz and big band scenes. Angela started playing the oboe in third grade and played all the way through college. She went on to graduate from UCLA's drama school and spent the greater part of her adult years in TV and film. But the jazz is in her heart, and now it's her passion. Enjoy the story.
Angela, hey, thanks for taking a minute out for Neon Jazz today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Joe.
My pleasure. Probably the name of your album is quite appropriate right now as we kind of reemerge from this 2 year hibernation, Light at the End of the Tunnel, done with the Outrageous Eight. With that in context, how does it feel at this particular time with hopefully things getting to a better place on planet Earth? How does this album release feel for you?
You're right. It is funny because when we recorded this record, we were still very much in shutdown, a pretty hard shutdown. We actually recorded this entire record in the backyard of one of the singers. And the way you can do that is you separate out the musicians by a couple of feet each, and you isolate their recording devices. And that's basically, you know, if you can't get into the studio, which we couldn't at that time because of the shutdown, this is an alternative way to do this. It felt like, and we hoped, you know, because we named the record then, and we hoped that it would be a light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, you know, the thing about this time, I remember when this was really raging early on, mm-hmm. a musician from San Francisco said, you know, when albums that come out now or as a result of this come out, there's going to be a special place for it. And I think there's a part of me that from my side of the microphone, I see that. But I think more for what you just explained by the way that you had to record this, I think that's going to be very emblematic about this time.
Every tune that we chose one way or the other, I mean, the first tune on the record is really cool, kind of a tempo version of Accustomed to His Face. And I saw the humor in how accustomed we became to having the same person in the house with us all the time. So every tune that's on here, When the Sun Comes Out, is on this record. And, of course, our single is New York Minute. And the reason I chose that tune with our keyboard player, Rocky Davis, who did this beautiful arrangement, is because I just felt like New York endured such a tough time. It almost feels like that's been glossed over in a way. It hit that coast first, and it was just devastating. And so we did that tune as a tribute to an incredible city that endured so much in the last few years.
So I'm curious, with such a large outfit, an octet, and there's a lot going on, how do you get everybody in sync? You know, jazz is, I understand, not as a musician, but from the outside and from what I hear, you know, it's really about having a good conversation. How do you get that many voices together and make sure, for instance, on this album, that you do have the ideal conversation and product that you're looking for?
Well, you know, it's interesting you should ask that, because at a certain kind of number of instrumentation, it becomes charted. You know, I think with the trio quartet, maybe you can still improvise and kind of do head charts, and some people do with larger instrumentation, but we're kind of jazz on the line of big band, I would say. So as a result of that, we are completely blessed to have like two stupendously talented arrangers in the band. Our trombone player, Harry Smallenberg, produced this record with me, and he is wrote Accustomed to His Face, that arrangement, and he wrote an amazing instrumental on this record called Now and Again, that's an original composition of his. And then our keyboard player, as I mentioned, Rocky Davis, is also an arranger. So one of the two of us, either Rocky and I or Harry and I, sit down and we say, or I'll bring him a tune and I'll say, oh, I really love, you know, like as an example, one of the ones we're breaking out for a future record, Peggy Lee did a lyrics to a Duke Ellington soundtrack to Anatomy of Murder. She took that soundtrack and she wrote lyrics to it, and it's called Gonna Go Fishing. I went to Harry and I said, Harry, I love this tune. And then he takes it and he arranges it pretty much to his aesthetic. And then we pass out the charts to everybody and we run it down. And we rehearse every single Wednesday night. Part of the way of getting that conversation going is that basically kind of since 2015, there has not been a Wednesday night. Even during lockdown, we Zoomed Wednesday night. Part of it is the unspoken conversation.
What are you ultimately hoping the listener gets from this album?
I hope that they get, you know, a little bit of fun and a little bit of reflection about how the last few years have been for them globally and also for our country as it, you know, relates to New York and stuff like that. I personally lost two people in the last 2 years from COVID, and I think a lot of people have had loss and grief. And so I hope that, you know, they get from this record, you know, they enjoy listening to it. It has a nice rhythm to it. I try not to do too many ballads. So there's quite a few upbeat ones. We do Hallelujah, I Love Him So in it. We really enjoyed doing that one. So, yeah, so I hope they get some enjoyment and some reflection.
You know, the one thing about this last 2 years is, you know, we've had a lot of time with ourselves to figure things out. So I'm curious, what did you learn about yourself over this quarantine pandemic time that maybe you didn't realize about yourself that's going to make you stronger as you get out and promote this new album?
Oh, that's such a good question. I think that's a question everybody can ask themselves, isn't it? That's actually, I'm going to write that one down. Thank you, Joe. That's a great question. You know, I think I learned that I really appreciate my friends and family. That everything, like the lyrics in New York Minute, everything passes in a flash. You really have to appreciate, kind of make a concerted effort to look for the positive in things, to enjoy how quick this goes by.
Let's go back to the very beginnings of your life. How did all this begin for you? How did your jazz journey begin? Where were you born and raised?
I'm actually from Northern California originally, a little town north of San Francisco, about an hour, called Calistoga. And it's kind of famous now because of the water and the wine. It's gotten a little more corporate than it was when I was a kid, but it was a very, very small town. There were 35 people in my graduating high school class, so that tells you something. It was musical. Literally, my family called me Lala because I was always humming when I was a kid. Like, my family was like, what is that noise you're making? I was humming some tune. I didn't know any music yet, but I was humming. Started playing guitar when I was in, like, first grade or something. Kind of whenever we traveled, I lugged around, like, a kid-sized guitar and just, I was always messing with music. In about third grade, the last instrument that was available was the oboe. Nobody else wanted to play the oboe. And I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. What is that instrument? And so I then played oboe, concert band in, you know, junior and high school, and then eventually classical music. Played oboe for 18 years or something. Finally put it down towards the end of college, and kind of started transferring over to the vocal part of it just because it was kind of a natural for me. But I definitely am a classical, you know, classical background. That's my basic learning as a musician. In addition to that, my dad was a high school teacher. Every afternoon he would come home and correct papers from the kids, and he would play big band and jazz, Buddy Rich and Stan Kenton and Errol Garner and, you know, Ella and just everybody. So I listened to that, and once I got a little further on in life, I had been singing rock and roll. I heard some people playing big band, and I was like, oh, man, that feels like home to me. And that's kind of how I ended up here.
So what was the first live jazz show that you saw, kind of big deal jazz show that really inspired you?
You know, it's not strictly jazz, but when I was about 14 or 15 years old, I saw Manhattan Transfer at the Golden Gate Theater in San Francisco. Since we lived kind of out in the sticks, I actually didn't see live music very much. But that was one of the first experiences I had. And I don't know if you know their song called Operator, but they started in an all-black theater. This is the way the show started. And it was just their voices, a cappella, doing the intro to that song. And I mean, I thought I was going to have a heart attack. I was so taken with it. I think I saw Buddy Rich in Santa Rosa. Probably next was the next person I saw. But I always really loved how melodic this music is. I think that we've gotten away from melody. Popular music is very much about rhythm, which I love too.
But I really love a tune that you can hum. You listen to it after you're because, you know, I love to hum. So for me, a melodic line really makes music very accessible for me.
How did your career begin? When did you get to a point where you felt like, I'm here, this is what I'm supposed to do, this feels right?
I'm definitely not here, and I don't think music is one of those weird things where I don't think that you ever arrive. There's always new challenges and new things, new sections of your life that make it quite different from the last. I think when we first started this band, we started in 2015, and we were just doing, you know, takedowns of kind of like, you know, a Nelson Riddle chart that he did for Ella, or which are wonderful, and a Dave Volpe chart, and we only had access to those. As the years have gone by, we've built a book where almost everything in the book is original. We have recorded two really records. One of them was live at a show here in Los Angeles at a place in Pasadena called The Mix. And at that point, we were really doing, we did a few originals, but mostly they were kind of more takedowns. Now, at this point, we're at a new phase where almost everything in the band is written by our arranger. And that makes it really different because you're almost originating a tune then, which is really exciting. And so I think, you know, I don't feel like we've arrived, but I feel like I feel like the stage that we're at right now, everybody in the band, which is, it's been the same people, you know, I think 7 of the 8 people in the band were the originating foundation members. I think that we all are very much on the same page. We've kind of decided what we like together. There's a very democratic kind of conversation amongst us. You know, like as an example, last Wednesday we had rehearsal, and I'm kind of putting together the set list for our CD release party this coming Saturday. I said to the guys, okay, so I have kind of these. Does anybody have any ideas about stuff that really sounded good? Let's try and add it into the set. And, you know, our musical director, Sam Morgan, had a couple suggestions, and other guys in the band said, oh, what about this? That sounded really great. And so I put it on the set list. Even though I'm the band leader, we are very much a unit together, kind of conversing about, you know, what sounds good, what doesn't. We give each other notes as we rehearse about, you know, the direction the band is going. And also, everybody in the band has, like, a dual purpose. Like, Ron Seiger, our alto player, is the librarian, but he also sends out CDs to people and does a lot of the book work. Sam Morgan's our musical director, but also plays lead center. So you get what I'm saying. Almost everybody in the band has, you know, 2 or more jobs. It makes it quite a democracy in that way.
So you graduated from UCLA's drama school, and I'm curious, you know, what did that training for drama and acting, how did that help you with your career in jazz and singing and being in music?
Oh, that's a really good question, too. You know, it's funny. I graduated from UCLA, and I did theater for a while, but my main aim actually was to work in film. And I did so for probably a decade. I probably did a decade of theater and a decade of film. I started doing theater when I was about 15 years old, and I continued to do it all the way through until I graduated from UCLA. The thing is, there's a lot about singing that's distracting if you feel uncomfortable in front of the camera and or you feel uncomfortable or nervous in front of people, performing in front of people. I actually, because of my experiences on stage prior, I actually find an audience like a friendly, positive experience. I know a lot of people really experience terrible stage fright and things like that. I actually walk out on stage and I feel like I'm home. I feel like that's probably a product of my having been on stage for so long. It really is home for me. Like, I've just been up there so much. And I'm kind of a ham. Like, I like to joke around and tease people, and it's all very relaxed and very informal in my shows. The band talks, and we have conversations, you know, with the audience, and people try to guess, you know, like our Christmas shows. Some of our Christmas stuff is so off the wall. I have people, like, guess, you know, what Christmas song it was that we just played, and I give them a hat. You know what I mean? Like, it's all very informal. So, for better or for worse, social media is a part of our lives now, and I spend a lot of time in front of the camera, either being videotaped while we're performing and or doing the stand-up little live reels and things like that. That's all stuff that I think has really benefited from my training. And just, you know, we did a music video for New York Minute, which is going to drop Tuesday night on our YouTube channel, which is our self-named YouTube channel. And so I think my training in film and acting actually has really helped with that kind of thing, which is kind of inevitably a part of our lives these days.
Why do you love jazz?
I love jazz kind of because of what you said. All music is a conversation. And big band and jazz to me are, the way I equate it is, I love classical music. That's my foundation as a musician. That's where I learned how to play. For me, jazz is the rock and roll of classical. The emblem of a free-spirited version, but with similar chord changes and intervals. For me, big band especially is like the louder version of rock and roll, and jazz is like the more intimate version of rock and roll. And so classical, you know, is the basic format, you know, it's the basic pattern for almost all song making, period. And to me, jazz and big band are the rock and roll of classical.
You know, as we return to the live stage and things kind of open up more and more, what do you hope we all collectively realize about the power of live music as we get back to it?
That's a difficult question to answer for me. I feel like there's a lot of different versions of how a live show goes. I mean, there's the hugendous, you know, going to Coachella experience, and there's a more intimate experience, more personal experience. I personally am a fan, kind of a more personal, smaller room, and more intimate experience. I hope that people start to appreciate a little bit more the fact that, you know, we've been shut down for so long, and so many musicians suffered terribly financially. I mean, I'm going to say a huge percent of musicians moved out of Los Angeles. They simply could not survive without live venues. You know, that's how they make their living. And I'm going to say three of the venues that we used to play at closed during COVID. So I hope that people in general, people who love music, will really get out and see live music. Now that we can, I hope that people will get out and support live music, because musicians who stayed in Los Angeles and stuck with it, there was a high price to pay for all of us for staying and trying to keep it together during a time when we literally could not play.
Everyone has a perception or an idea of who they think you are, your family, your friends, your fans, but ultimately you live your life. You have a perception of you. Who do you think you are?
Who do you think you are?
That's right.
Well, I hope to be, you know, at all times, I hope to be kind of an inspiration for people. You know, I hope to be that person who inspires kind of positive experiences with people. When I first started singing with big bands, I sang with a lot of big bands where I was just coming in as a singer. And I saw a lot of musicians mistreated in those situations. It was kind of an example of what not to do. And so for me, I think I am a person who is dedicated, even when stressed, even when under the gun, to be as kind and kind of as mannerly as I can be all the time. That's what I hope. That's who I think I am.
It's a great answer. Angela, thank you for taking a minute out for Neon Jazz. Good luck with the release and the return to the stage and everything in between.
Thank you, Joe. I'm so, so excited to have been on your show. We love our jazz listeners. We hope that they'll go to outrageous8.com and go check out everything we're doing. Like I say, this is such an exciting week. Tomorrow night, we have our video dropping on our YouTube channel, which is Angela O'Neill Outrageous 8 Records. This coming Saturday, our record drops. This is a little aside for people to know, one of the other things that we did during COVID is I started doing solo records for individual people in the band. So Ron, our alto player, actually has a straight-ahead jazz, no vocals record out there called Take Two, which was released on Outrageous 8 Records about 6 months ago. And we are in the making of two or three other records, all within the eight people who are in the Outrageous 8. So it's a really exciting time for us, and we're just grateful for people like you who bring that music to our listeners. And we're so glad for you, Joe. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview. We give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in Los Angeles, Kansas City, and spots all over the globe, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Angela for her time, music, and story. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to the neonjazz.blogspot.com. And for everything Joe Domino, go to joedomino.com. And when you're there, you can either subscribe on Patreon or donate a few bucks to keep the Neon Jazz flame burning bright. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.